This is the third day of the January 2016 weekend retreat in Springwater. Incredibly quiet, still morning. Just the lightest of snows. Incredibly beautiful. Dance of snowflakes. And perhaps some quieting, sitting together for several days. Some space. I was going to say space between thoughts, but space with the thoughts or without. One moment of thought, and then another moment, no thought. Openness. Quiet. Does anything need to disturb the quiet? Can there be quiet and thinking, quiet and doing what we call doing, cooking, cleaning? Walking. On the icy driveway or the icy path. Carefully. And perhaps carefully, full of care. Listening. To the crunch, feeling the slight slip, catching oneself, looking up to trees, sky, open fields, forest, everything here. Nothing out of place. Right where it is. There was a question on the board last night, and I hope it's okay if I can use that. I'll have to read it because it would kind of not do it justice to try to summarize, but I was hoping too that perhaps this question would weave into a question that's come up from day one and comes up again and again. through all the days of all the retreats, I think. Maybe not. Not for everyone, not all the time. But the question is something like, what happens when I get home? How is this quiet, peace, work, relative quiet? How will it be when I'm back to work, in relationship, and so forth? So let's, one at a time. Or actually several questions in the note. It starts out, I'll skip the first part. I have heard many Krishnamurti talks on the topic of what is meditation, and he seems consistently to suggest that meditation is a state of alive, intelligent, non-mechanical awareness rather than a system, a method, a set of postures, etc. So I'm having a hard time reconciling that with the role sitting meditation plays at Springwater. Are the sittings not a system because they're optional and free form? Are they a compromise between Krishnamurti and Zen? A reflection of Tony's unique perspective? What's your view? And what was Tony's? We can't speak for Tony. But the books are out there. We can study the books, but what would we learn? What it says in a book. And I'm not putting down the books, but we make money on the books. But it's a starting point, and it's good to question everything, I say. Tony, Krishnamurti, possibly not everyone is familiar with Krishnamurti, but that was a good summary, that a state of alive, intelligent, non-mechanical awareness. And many other people have said the same or similar things through the years in looking at meditation. Saying it and then sitting quietly. So, what's the deal? Say one thing, do another. So, I think first what comes up is, yes, to look at what is meant by a system. And one internal check right at this moment is wondering if there's already a movement towards defending Springwater. The work or practice of Springwater. Somebody said, I think it was last night, practice with a small p. We can and we have been reviewing, re-looking, wondering, changing. Somebody also said last night, or this morning, I can't remember, this morning, that this is nothing like the sesshin that one experiences at Zen centers. It's something different. A silent retreat. But it could still be considered a system, a form, a way, a mechanical device, an artificial creation. We don't normally wake up early in the morning, sit for an hour and a half, eat in silence, work in silence, sit for another several hours, and more hours at night. So is that a system, or a method, a training? I don't know. I'm just watching right at this moment. It is a break in the routine, which is probably its own system, the work system, all of the things we take for granted in daily life, the expectations. What are we training, if we're training? And that's, to me, more a question here. Is there an expectation of getting somewhere? If I do enough of this, then there'll be some peace. Or there'll be what I've read about, an explosion, a burst of understanding, an enlightenment, or several enlightenments, degrees of enlightenments, progress. Will I have something that others don't have? Special knowledge? Status? Status in a meditation community? In the world? Person of wisdom? And that's, in most endeavors, I think these expectations are encouraged. If you take your five-year-old, or you are the five-year-old, learning the piano, acquiring the skills, the discipline, the ear, coordination, so that someday there'll be the reward a big concert hall, spotlight, or perhaps somewhere along the way it's noticed that the training falls away, and one just plays for the beauty, for no reason, for love, Sometimes I almost feel apologetic. We don't really offer anything here. We don't make those promises about someday. The lure, the carrot. But still we can ask, if the sitting itself isn't some kind of separation methodology, perhaps a withdrawing from the world that's crying out, at least at times people doing violent things to each other, to the environment, to themselves. Aren't we that world? And I don't mean metaphorically. And if one feels, perhaps somewhat or passionately, in need of something different, of trying something different or not trying, it can be very easy with that word, but experimenting with something different. Or seeing if there's something different than the mechanical, the repetitious, the grind of everyday life, the chasing after goals that get further and further away, or we achieve the goals, and there's still not that satisfaction that was hoped for. One has the whole thing, the family, the house, the car, the vacation. And something's still not quite satisfying. There's some urge to discover. If there's something else, some itch that needs to be scratched, or there's just a wondering. So someone said in group yesterday, so very touching, not knowing what I am, who I am. And that comes up, what am I? Who am I? What is it, this human being, this human whatever, this life, this world, a real passionate curiosity, or, as I said before, maybe just an itch, or a wondering if there's a different way to live, not causing so much pain to oneself and others. Probably primarily we look to ourselves, but doesn't matter. Looking, if it's possible, for a life without suffering. And wondering what brings this about. If that's an open question, I don't think it's mechanical. I don't think there is a system to plug into. That really addresses that, that really meets that. although lots of people will offer lots of things. I was remembering, and I'm trying to bring a few of the pieces together in the brain of a real Zen maverick, Bankei. He went to a talk, like going to a Krishnamurti talk perhaps. And he heard somebody mention, he heard or remembered, took on the phrase bright virtue. And he went to a Confucian talk in China years ago, centuries ago. Think in China. And he couldn't let it go. He wanted to know what this bright virtue was. It was, had that kind of combination of being confusing and yet somehow very enticing. Really, it really grabbed him. So he went to the Confucian scholars and they said, we can't really go into that kind of thing. We really just read this stuff. Repeat what we've heard. They're very honest about it. You've got to go to the Zen people. Maybe to the Taoist people. So he went to the Zen centers. And he worked and worked and sat and sat. And still no satisfaction. So he went off on his own. But he stayed with the sitting. I think there was nothing else to do. He just had to be with the question and just eating enough to keep going. And at some point it revealed itself to him that, as he put it, everything is taken care of in bright virtue. There was a joy. But there was also what he saw as a necessity to help other people avoid going through what he went through. So he didn't create a system. But people gathered around and wanted to hear him talk. And they wanted to sit. And as I recall, his system as it was, well, it was, well, if you'd like to sit, go ahead, sit for a while. You'll get tired of sitting, so you get up and walk for a while, and then you'll sit, because you're tired of walking, and you'll get up after a while. I hope I haven't misremembered that, but it's pretty close. I think it's fairly accurate. So here, we're not quite that loose. We have bells, time periods of sitting. And it's interesting, now that I think about it, there's always like an undertow or an undercurrent of, that's not quite the right word. There's some people that say, let's get rid of all of that. So maybe someday, today, we'll do that. We'll have the last bell after. I think we've had the last bell already. But then there's a lot of other people who say, well, we really like the structure. It's nice not to have to decide when to get up. And I've noticed, without saying anything, I think in the orientation, or we usually say something, that you don't have to get up, and that some people stay sitting. And of course, people go out for a walk. That one can discover for oneself what fits, what feels helpful, or maybe necessary, or choiceless, or maybe one is, yes, moving very mechanically. Striving. Trying to get somewhere. Trying to stick rigidly to the schedule in hopes that something will happen. But then perhaps that's revealed. The repetition, the mechanical quality, following the breath and getting upset if I miss one breath, or counting the breath, or I'm not addicted to following the breath, but I'm straining to hear something, to aware, to attend. When I eat, I'm being ultra careful to be attentive, to be good at it. And there's a noticing, the tension, the holding. Maybe a relaxing and a tasting of the food, of the breath, with no intention. I think the conditioned, the mechanical, this heritage is here, with or without any system and without any encouragement. What will break that down? Or does it need to break down? Is it enough just to see what's here? Freely, openly. The discovery of the mechanical is not mechanical. Not bound. Not dependent on what anyone says. People who talk, give talks, write books, can only point out, speak from what they're seeing in the moment. But it really is for each of us to discover for ourselves. Just going back to this, what are we? Not so much who are we, but what? Are we only the driven, the programmed? Is there something else? Unbound. I was looking at some of the other questions. If this is a compromise between someone who says, I'm not quite sure what. Between something that's utterly free form and between Zen, which has its structure and hierarchy. I don't know. When the Buddha, despair of going from place to place, talking to, working with various disciplines, teachers. I don't know if they had gurus in those days. He sat down under a tree. Of course, this could all be myth and legend. Sat down to stay with the question, the concern, what is the suffering, what is the cause of suffering, and is there a way out of suffering, a release, a dissolution of suffering. So did he walk away from the rigid practices, the asceticism, to compromise, or just letting all the extraneous stuff drop away. And then maybe like Bankei, people came, wanted to be with this person, hear what they had to say, undertake the same or similar questioning, and then over time, as seems to happen with human beings, structures are formed, methods are proposed. We're all hungry for someone to tell us what to do, how to get there. I think half of the koans are, what is the way and how do I attain it? And someone responding that there's no way, nothing to attain. In so many words, or no words. So why do we come together? In silence. There can be so many answers at any given moment. Maybe this, the primary answer is one doesn't know. At the last November retreat, I remember in one of the dialogues somebody saying, who's been here for years, and when he walks from the parking lot up that little hill to the center, there's a lot of fear. Little fear or a lot of fear. So maybe we come despite that. That fear of losing one's moorings. One certainty of who I am and what I am. To have a chance to sit with others, the warmth, the shared energy, the quiet, to see what's here. And people have found, this person has found, that there's a real joy in that. Not all the time. A lot of hardship, a lot of meeting things that really didn't want to see. But in the meeting, actually being here, and not having a way to immediately run away, to get involved in something. But yes, I'll say with that, there's a real joy. Energy, alertness. So maybe that's a way of looking at this other question. Is this joy of discovery, this meeting, limited to this sitting, this quiet, this being together? Or can it flower in the airport, the bus station, the workplace, with one's family, by oneself, working, resting, sleeping, eating? Or is it impossible? So what is meditation in daily life? If it is this awareness, listening, sensing, it really has no restrictions. It's not limited. But we're quick to say, things like, as soon as I get home, I'll lose it. Or last time when I left retreat, by the first throughway stop, I got angry at the clerk or something like that. Well, that happened. And it was noticed. And does that mean that's the only way it can be? Is it so that for the 3 or 7 or 5 days that we're here in spring water, that it's all perfect calmness, awareness, no turmoil? Or maybe it's relatively quiet. But is life, daily life, all turmoil? All agitation. Maybe when we describe it to ourselves, it sounds like that. But when we're not describing, when we're actually here, who knows what could be? Remembering someone talking about going to the market on a Saturday morning in a busy city, telling me about this, and then there was just this quieting, opening, and seeing the beauty of the people, the produce, everything alive, lively. not needing to be on a hillside at a retreat center. This opening is possible. We were saying yesterday, natural. Our nature. We think it's something to be attained, something alien, and then we create these systems to go after something that's here. It's almost the thought likes to postpone. Likes to look over the horizon and imagine. It's what thought is good at, imagining. So again, it's useful, making a building, creating a play or movie, poem. But maybe thought can learn to be quiet when it's not needed. We can discover the beauty, the joy, the simplicity of this moment. Maybe that's what really is what it's going to be like when I leave. I'm either moving to the horizon, or it's discovered that it's okay to be here. I don't know if that was quite clear, but the sense here is that this going away, this worry about what things will be like, can be discovered right here, right in this moment. And maybe there's a learning. That's totally sufficient, complete, whole, and not to be tricked, or to see that trickiness. But you'd better worry about what it's going to be like tomorrow. Get prepared. Which is just thinking. And seeing that and staying here. Here, all the tomorrows, all the past, and no time at all. Just this. We'll end the talk here.